This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Davina from Devon. I've been sober curious for quite a few years. Never really made it stick because, well, everybody drinks alcohol, right? Anyway, I decided to join OTI after listening to the pod and just the enthusiasm from Ben and Shaz shouting about AF life. I'm so glad I joined the community because I'm now nearly 200 days alcohol free. It's an absolute game changer for me. Everybody on the Zooms are lovely. It's just like one great big extended family and we're all just cheering everybody on. I would recommend without hesitation that you join because it's just the best thing I've ever done.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. As always, it's ace to have you listening. As always, we're dead excited to get going. And as always, we've got another fabulous guest to chat to on this episode. Wherever you might be on your alcohol-free adventure, your journey, you might be sober curious, teetotal, you might still be drinking, you might just be having a think about it, dipping your toe into the strange waters of sobriety. That sounds really weird. Wherever you are, it's really good to have you here. My name's Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England, officially now more than 5 years alcohol flipping free. Just done like a swanky city break with me mates. Obviously, not a drop of alcohol. It was one of the best weekends ever. So, so good. I didn't think stuff like that was possible. I thought alcohol-free life would be dull, it would be boring, you wouldn't see your friends again, you wouldn't have fun on holiday. What an absolute crock of. The complete opposite is true. To cut a very long story short, because we do need to speak to the guest, I took a break from drinking. It was only ever meant to be 90 days. I drank too much, too fast, too often, all the time. And that break from alcohol just basically turned into the best life-changing decision I'd ever made. Hence why we wang on about it week in, week out on this podcast. Ben, please get a word in edgeways. I'm a bit excited. I might not stop.
It's fine. I'm Ben. Excuse me. Recovering from COVID. 35, live in Liverpool. Husband's a gem. Got married a few weeks ago. Alcohol-free wedding day. It was great. Woo! Dad to Leo. Stepdad to Alfie and Millie. Just quickly, Sharon Hartley, she has to be this woman of the people. Oh, just went on some swanky city break. She went to Milan for Fashion Week, darling.
Wait. Yes, I have just been to Milan.
For Fashion Week, darling.
I wasn't there for Fashion Week, but can I just tell you something really, really quickly? Where we stayed in our Airbnb, which was like about 10 minutes on the tube outside of like Milan city centre, we were near some studios, right? And every single day we were there, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, they were holding castings for actual beautiful people, for proper supermodels. And there's me trolling past with like my happy shop bag going, hiya, all right, bellissimo, bellissimo. We didn't get snapped up. I don't know why.
I mean, interesting. So you heckled models at Fashion Week. Great. But I am 3 years alcohol free and I was definitely a binge drinker. I didn't necessarily know it at the time, but I didn't drink every day. But when I did start drinking, I didn't have an off switch. Giving it booze, one of the best things I ever did. Would I be husband to Jem? Would I be dad to baby Leo if I'd not removed alcohol back in July 2020? That's when it was, wasn't it, Shaz?
Gosh, ages ago. Yeah.
Ages ago now. I don't know. But you know what? I'm bloody glad that I didn't carry on drinking the way I was because, as someone said to us on a Zoom call in our very early days of the Over the Influence community, I didn't have a rock bottom, but I could see it from where I was standing. And for me, I didn't have a rock bottom, but I could see that I was potentially could have headed towards that. But anyway, let's meet our guest because, Shaz, you love it when we go international. Although, I don't think I'm going to speak much today because I hear that our guest is a Shaz fan.
Well, who wouldn't be?
Go on, you do
is
the
that
big
true,
intro.
Austin? Is that... No, I just want to get this confirmed because
before
we go any further because it might change the style of my intro depending on Austin's answer.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a big Shaz fan. And I will tell you right off the bat that I was hoping for a long rambling intro from both of you, because it's my favorite thing when I turn on the podcast and I'm on my walk in the morning and I just get to hear you guys go on and on and on. And I love it. I like, it's my favorite thing. So like the music starts and you start rambling and I'm like, I'm here for it. So
brilliant. Brilliant. You can stay. I like that answer, Austin. You are more than welcome. As Ben mentioned there, he's 3 years alcohol free. I am 5 years alcohol free. Combined, that gives us the figure of 8. Very good at maths. And you are over 8 years alcohol free. Austin Carr, based in Denver, Colorado. Thank you so much and welcome to Over the Influence. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. As I said, I am a huge fan of the show and I've been listening to it for years. It's one of my favorite things to do. I think you guys were like the intro to sober podcasts for me. So you're the OGs as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, man. Ben, can we use that in some sort of testimonial? That is brilliant. That is so, so good.
I'll write a review on Apple Podcasts and I'll put it 5 stars.
Thank you. It helps the algorithms.
I've heard that from someone before.
Yeah. Thanks.
Brilliant stuff. That's very kind of you. Joking apart, that is just, it's lovely of you to say thank you. And it is great to have you here. Austin, we've got loads to talk about. 8 years of sobriety. We've got a lot to cram in. I'm going to go straight in. Okay, you sent us some information prior to us recording, and we always like to know a little bit about your story and what led you to this point. Can I just quote a little bit of it back to you, and then we can maybe start from there? You happy
absolutely.
With that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, here we go. So this is what you said, Austin. I had known for years I had a problem, and I knew I would either need to get sober or I would die. It doesn't get much more serious than that, does it? Take us back to that point when you knew there had to be a mega change.
Yeah, the end of my sobriety, my end of my drinking career, as it were, kind of came like to a head in the last 18 months of my drinking. I had gotten a new job. So I'd lost a couple jobs along the way, as one does when they're heavy into alcoholism. But I had gotten this job that was my dream job. It was a job that my resume said that I should have. And it was amazing for a little while. And then for some reason that I don't fully understand, I just started drinking the way that I wanted to drink. And I mentioned this the other day in a TikTok. My end of my drinking day and the beginning of my drinking day just kind of started to collapse together. And eventually I started drinking in the morning. And that meant that I could drink from the time I woke up until the time I passed out. And that became all of about 4 hours of my day was spent not drinking. It was not conducive to living when you're drinking that much on a daily basis. And everything in my life was just coming apart. My health was terrible. My mental health was terrible. I couldn't live anymore. And I did get to the point where I would wake up in the morning and be sad that I had woken up. And that was this big turning point in my life where I think everyone started to realize that this was the end. And I think everyone else realized it first before I did. But eventually my family came to me and said that it was time to get help. And for whatever reason, on that day when they said that to me, I heard them and I decided that it was time. So that was, the end was really brutal. But there's a lot of time, obviously, like everybody else's drinking story. There's a lot of time before that that wasn't great. But the last 18 months were unsustainable for life.
There's lots of things I love about this podcast. I think one of them is that we've never met before. And, you know, you've come on today for the first time. I've seen you on social media, how I know that you're a Shaz fan, for example. But what I love about this podcast is that the guy that we're meeting today, Austin, is a guy with bright eyes, you know, a massive smile that came on the screen. You look, you know, I can only see you from the waist up because we're on Zoom, but you look like a pretty healthy guy. I have to say, how fabulously tidy is your room that you've got behind you on this Zoom screen? Everything's very well organized and isn't it gorgeous? But, you know, you're presenting us with a guy who seems to be happy, pretty well put together. And isn't it nuts that you changed, obviously there's a lot to it, but you changed one thing. You decided to remove one thing and you went from somebody who was waking up, drinking, feeling a bit hopeless about life now and the future, And now this well-together, lovely guy joins the Zoom screen. Like, do you feel like it's two different people?
I completely feel like it's two different people. A guest on your podcast a while ago talked about they changed one thing. They didn't change one thing. They changed everything about their lives. And that is exactly the way I feel. There's very few things, with the exception of my friends, my family, that is the same as the way I was living before. My life is unrecognizable compared to 8.5 years ago. And I think that that's one of the magical things about removing alcohol, is that you become not a different person, but the person that you really are. I became the person that I am, not drowning myself in alcohol. It's completely different. And Ben, you said something really important there. Like, I try and keep my space looking. This is where I work every day. On this side of the screen is a little bit of a mess. On that side is fairly clean. But if my space is clean, I feel okay. But I really work in my life to make sure that I'm exactly who I am. Because when I was drinking, I wore this mask of perfection all the time, which is such a big part of who I was. My life could be a complete wreck, but I wanted you to see me in a certain way. And that was impossible to maintain as well. When your life is actively on fire, it's really hard to maintain perfection to the outside world.
I want to pick up on what you just said there about when you remove alcohol, you sort of finally reveal who you are. For me, this is the thing that it's the gift that just keeps giving. And it's really, is terrifying the right word? Probably. I think when you start out and you're doing this and you go through that first year, you know, the first of everything, and you remove alcohol. And yes, I think not one aspect of your life doesn't improve. Don't get us wrong. You know, big disclaimer, it can be tricky. You've still got stuff to navigate. But further on in that, and I'm really interested in talking about long-term sobriety as well, because I think people massively need hope. They really do need flipping hope. Year two, year three, year four, year five and beyond now, stuff still happens. And by stuff, I mean good stuff. I mean personal stuff. I mean things that you're finding out about yourself and who you are. For me, this, I wish I had like a magic phrase of trying to get it across to people that removing alcohol doesn't change who you are. Depending on who you're talking to, some people might not like it, and you've changed. Yeah, tell you what, I've changed for the flipping better. It reveals exactly who you are and who you are supposed to be. Talk to us a bit, Austin, about that process, because I find it fascinating, scary, hilarious. It's bonkers.
I'm trying to think about how I want to phrase this, because it's such a huge question about becoming who you are. I'll go back just for a second, because I didn't start drinking until I was in college. I started drinking at 19, which is different than a lot of people. I grew up in a small town, but I didn't discover drinking until I was much older. 19 doesn't seem like that old now, but it felt really old at the time. But in my head, I was this scared, unlikable, shy little boy. That's the story that I had in my head of who I was. So when I discovered drinking, that voice was quieted. That person went away. I became this totally different person. I was outgoing. I was the life of the party. I could do anything I wanted to. And I linked being outgoing and alcohol together for a majority of my life, for 19 years. What I didn't know is I was actually all of those things. I was outgoing. I was likable. I was friendly. I didn't know any of that. And so alcohol hid actually all of those things, the good parts of me, for a really long time. And then when I quit drinking, I like the reality of who I was emerged. And it was really surprising, because I had been telling myself a story about who I was for a really long time. And then over the last 8.5 years, I've just really been working on reinforcing who I am through my actions, through the way I show up for people. And through that, I get to live this life that is unlike anything that I ever thought that I wanted. I always say that this is a life I never thought I wanted, but it is so much better than I could have imagined. You know, year one was brutal. It's really hard. It was really hard. It's not hard for some people, but it was hard for me. I had a lot of firsts to get through. I had things to uncover, but I've been really lucky to work with an amazing therapist that helps me continue to uncover who I am in my sobriety. And that's been hugely helpful. So, you know, longer term, like you said, Sharon, things come up in your life just like they do. I talk about waves of emotion that wash over us. And they start big, like in early sobriety, there are these huge waves that knock you down and you don't feel like you can breathe. But eventually those waves seem to get smaller. And I've never known if they get smaller, if I got bigger, like if the waves are still the same size and I just can navigate them better. But I've found that even though life is hard, it's so much easier than it ever was when I was drinking. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
It was a big question. And I think you did a very good job of answering such a large question. Of course, it throws up more, Austin. And I think, would you say that, you know, eight and a half years into this now, do you feel like you're comfortable with who you are now? Not necessarily, I mean, kind of comfortable knowing the person that you are. I mean, it opens up the philosophical, do we ever really know who we are? And is it just a continuing progress forever and ever and ever? But would you say that you are comfortable today, now?
Some days yes and some days no. I think it's still an exploration of who I am. Because that voice of the shy little boy is still there. I can easily get back to the point where I'm not who I am today. And I can withdraw and I can tell myself a different story. But I know myself better every day because I work on knowing myself better every day. I do daily work on my sobriety and on myself to make sure that I don't forget that I'm 3,162 days sober, and I want to get to 3,163. And in order to do that, I have to do work every day. Ben, I have a quote for you on this topic. I know you're a quote guy.
Come on.
Yes.
Love it's a long one, so bear with
some
me.
New ones, actually. Yeah, okay. Do I need to write it down, or can you text it to me afterwards?
It's from Florida Scott Maxwell, and it says, "You need only claim the events of your life to make yourself yours. When you truly possess all you have been and done, which may take some time, you are fierce with reality."
Let's do that one again, Austin. Let's do it again.
All right. "You need only claim the events of your life to make yourself yours. When you truly possess all that you have been and done, which may take some time, you are fierce with reality."
So what does that mean to you?
So for me, that means that I have to, everything that I've done in my past, good and bad, every thought that I've had about who I am, I have to internalize those things. I have to accept those things. And if I do that, if I truly come to terms with all of that, then I get to see my reality. It isn't clouded by something else. I live in my real world. And that's super powerful to me, because if I can do that, then I can see the problems in my life. I can see where I'm making mistakes. All of those things are possible if I'm fierce with reality. But none of those things are possible if I'm lying to myself, if I'm lying to other people, if I'm clouding my judgment. Because I can easily say, oh, those things didn't really happen. That was someone else. And that's why I'm really careful with that language about, are you someone different? I'm not someone different. I am that person. I'm choosing to make a break from that life and do something else.
Takes balls, though, doesn't it? It takes massive balls. Excuse my turn of phrase. But
there you
talks.
Go. We've gone from a beautifully eloquent quote to Sharon Hartley's quote. Takes balls, doesn't it?
But it bloody does.
Yeah.
To be fierce with reality, just to stop drinking takes. I was going to use the word courage. Takes balls. It really does. But to this episode's gone deep really early on, by the way. I feel like we've gone to another level with Austin, like, quickly, and I'm enjoying it. But that
are you
whole
getting, by the way, Sharon, John Waite energy from Austin? You know, different accent. Have you heard the episode with John Waite, Austin?
Yeah.
So he is Strictly Come Dancing star over here, yes. Dancing with the Stars over in the US.
Yeah.
I'm getting the same kind of settled energy from you, this kind of calmness that comes through the Zoom screen. It's really lovely.
Yeah, completely. And a total, oh, my question's gone to shit now. I'm just going to, it's
pretty. It takes balls.
It takes balls.
I just
talked
to you, John Waite energy. I'm trying to jog
your
memory.
Yeah, that. And then talking about who you are and uncovering who you are and looking back at the past, and just going back to what you said then, Ben, about sort of the comparisons with John Waite, the way you speak so calmly and confidently about the past, about that person, and embracing that and being comfortable with who you are now. And I've written down here, shy, unlikable little boy. That breaks my heart to hear you describe yourself as that, you know, prior to stopping drinking. There's about 72 points in this. I don't even know. It's not even a question. I've just gone off on
I've
one.
I've got a question.
Help me, Ben.
So, because it's confronting when you're doing this kind of work, it can feel uncomfortable. What are the benefits of understanding your reality? Because if it is potentially painful to think back sometimes, and it can be quite unsettling, I suppose, to really evaluate who you are, both the, you know, the events of your life and the way that you responded to them. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to have that kind of confront? Why? What are the positives of doing that work if it is a hard and difficult process, or can be?
I can only speak for myself. I don't think I could be sober today if I hadn't have done the work of uncovering how I got to where I am. Because if I just put that in a box and set it aside and said, that's a different person, and never thought about why I did those things and who it impacted and how it affected my present, I think I'd return to drinking, because I wouldn't have understood what makes this life so much better. And I think that uncovering of all of my faults and the actions that I took, and like I said, how I hurt other people, I can look back at that and say, I know that was me, and I never want to live that way again. And the reason that I lived that way was because I was pouring massive amounts of alcohol into my face. And that those two things are tied together. The way that I was living, who I was then, and huge amounts of alcohol, those two things are just tied immediately together. And if I want to break that connection, then I have to work on it every day. And part of that is uncovering who I was.
Can we talk more about... Oh,
sorry,
Bam.
No, sorry. Sorry, Shaz.
Sorry, Bam.
No, sorry, Shaz.
Should I carry on?
Yeah. Slick operation here, isn't it, Austin? When you're listening every week, you're thinking, blimey.
On my walk in the morning, I'm going to be like, I can't listen to this anymore. So,
I can't listen to shit. I'm going to turn it off.
Absolute, yeah. What a bunch of absolute plonkers. Yeah.
Maggie did tell me that this is what it would be like, though, I have to tell
you.
Yeah,
so good. I'm glad.
Absolute chaos.
Yeah. Maggie's worked with us before. Maggie's on this Zoom call. Maggie is just fabulous. She's behind the Sober Summit. She's a community member. She sings your praises as well, Austin. We think she quite likes us as well, but she'll have warned you. She's dealt with us. I want to talk more, Austin, about doing the work, because this is a theme that comes up a lot in sobriety, in alcohol-free life. Obviously, we've got an online community and people can join us for a month. They can join us for 3 years. They can stay as long as they want. They can stay for a shorter time as they wish. And we always say, look, if you're going to join our community, any community, and you are embarking on changing your relationship with alcohol, you've got to do the work. Now, that looks so different for so many different people, doesn't it? Depending on, crikey, well, first of all, the amount you drink. You know, big disclaimer here, if you have got a physical addiction to alcohol, you need to go and see a medical professional. That's not us. We are not qualified in that area. If you're looking to change your relationship with alcohol, a community might be for you, or whatever. But we often talk about doing the work. So for me, that looked like reassessing everything I've ever known. I was obsessed, utterly obsessed with alcohol. So I became obsessed with not drinking, and I still am. And I sort of like dived headfirst into alcohol-free life. And one of my favourite phrases is, I gave it my full arse. You can't come at this half-arsed. For other people, that doing the work, it might be uncovering very much the reasons why you drank and reflecting back on many, many, many years of drinking. It might be therapy. Talk to us more about that, about doing the work and how important it is when you stop drinking and when you start uncovering who you are.
I tried it the other way. I tried not uncovering things and just removing alcohol. I called life minus alcohol, and that did not work. Like, I just kept living the life I was living, and then I just took away alcohol, and it was a disaster. And I returned to drinking. It was a very short-lived attempt, but it did not work. So just a quick background. When I quit drinking, I told my family I would do 100 days of sobriety. And I honestly thought that was long enough to get them off my back, that would just be long enough to, like, I could return to drinking. I could maybe follow in Ben's footsteps and try moderation, that somehow that would be the magic cure to everything. But I knew that 100 days might be long enough just to solve the problem. So I got enrolled in an intensive outpatient program, which was incredibly helpful for me. If you're not familiar with that in the States, I don't know if they have it everywhere. I'm sure that they don't. Some places have different things. But it was 3 days a week, 3 hours a day for like 6 weeks. And I think that gave me this like huge jumpstart on understanding addiction and understanding how my life needed to change and how I could re-enter kind of my family dynamic. And then I went to meetings, which was incredibly important to me personally, but that doesn't mean it. All that gave me was hope for the future, because what I saw, and I know online communities, in-person meetings, any of those things, I needed hope that tomorrow would be better. And seeing people that had trudged the road before me, living happy, fulfilling lives, was what I needed to keep going. And so, like I said, whether that's online, in a chat community, in a video community, wherever it is, I think that that is one of the most important things that you can find, is hope for the future. Because honestly, when I started, I had no idea what tomorrow was going to be like. I just knew that behind me was wreckage and in front of me was just darkness. I didn't know what it was. It's like I needed somebody to hold a flashlight for me to show me even just a little bit ahead, one more day ahead of where I was. Changed my life, because now I could see that tomorrow could be better, and I had hope that tomorrow could be better. And so I started working on two big things in my life: being honest with myself and other people, and giving back. And those two things have become linchpins in my life. I think that those are the two biggest things that keep me sober on a daily basis. If I can't be honest with myself and other people, then I'm completely hosed.
We're just going to take a really quick break from this fabulous chat with Austin. Much more to come from him in just a sec. And I know we say it every single week, we're just going to take a quick break. And it's never quick. Today it will be. I'm doing this little bit on my own. And if you can hear that noise, there's like a whirring, a fan in the background. I'm in a Premier Inn. I'm in a hotel room on my own. Normally, you'd get Alan Partridge, wouldn't you, broadcasting from his travel lodge? Well, this is Sharon Partridge, and I'm in my budget hotel because this weekend we have done our penultimate OTI outdoor adventure of 2023 in South Wales. It has been epic. I think the best bit about it, it didn't rain. The sun shone from start to finish. We met in a remote car park somewhere in the Brecon Beacons at 7 o'clock this morning. We finished the hike at around, 3 o'clock? And we went around and up and over Penny Van, I think that's the correct pronunciation, with a load of Over the Influence community members. We say it all the time, quite often, the missing piece to your AF jigsaw is connection. It can be a flipping lonely road, stopping drinking, especially when your entire social circle still drinks and they question, why are you doing this? Just have one. Oh, aren't you boring? Today was the opposite of that. It was just superb. Nothing boring about it. It was beautiful. The sun shone. People just chatted and chatted and chatted. And to round it off, we all thoroughly enjoyed my mum's homemade gingerbread and flapjacks. If you want more information about what we do, our OTI outdoor events. We've got one more this year, which is happening next month. It's looking like that is sold out. However, we are now working on a programme of events for 2024. It's likely to be one of the events we will do is the Yorkshire Three Peaks and some other big ticket stuff as well. We can't wait. We adore them. Myself and Ben get on most of the events. And we're led by people that know exactly what they are doing, qualified, fully qualified mountain guides. And we do it with a brilliant organisation called Second Life Outdoors. So if you want any more info about the events and the meetups, we do pizza and podcast as well. Just keep an eye on the Instagram stories for the Tri Day. You can head to overtheinfluence.co.uk/Tri Day and sign up for a free Zoom to ask us any questions about the community or ping us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Right, let's get back to the episode with Austin.
So for you, that's what you mean by doing the work, because I'm listening to you talking and I'm thinking, I'm not sure if I've ever done the work, really, if I'm being completely honest. Like, I don't know if I think I'm quite a self-aware person on a kind of day-to-day basis, and I like to make sure that I'm kind of representing myself how I want to represent myself. You know, I don't kind of, I'm not somebody who bowls into situations. I like to think things through. I don't think I've ever done the kind of, like, I've done like coaching courses where you learn the theory of this and that, but I've never really kind of sat there and gone, who am I and why do I do things? I don't think. I mean, partly it's just, you know, having a nearly 1-year-old baby and a busy household and jobs, and Sharon texting me every few minutes about OCI. Have I got time to do the work, Shaz? Bloody well, have I. But then also giving back then, you class that as doing the work, because I suppose, you know, I've done this podcast every week for however long now. So does that count as doing...
3 long years, Ben. 3 years.
Long years. Would you say that counts as doing the work?
If I said no, would that change the tone of this interview?
Probably.
I don't know. I think I need to do that. I need to find some time to do the first bit. But then what you're saying is that giving back is it. That's not a separate thing. You know, there is almost it's a selfish giving in a way, you know, that you are giving back, but it's bringing benefit to you and you class it as doing the work.
I do. I think that uncovering our past and becoming okay with the things that we've done is part of that work. And my guess is, Ben, that you've done some of that, like coming to terms with, I've heard you talk enough on the podcast about the way you were before and how you are now. You've probably, even though maybe not sitting down and written it out, you've done the work of thinking about who you were and also how you want to be now. I think that that's a big chunk of how do I want to show up for people. I think that I was incredibly selfish. Everything was about me. My time was so important to me. I was a taker. That's the way I would have classified who I was. I took from everything around me. I took from my family. I took from the world. And when I got sober, I realized that I had to change everything about myself. I couldn't just eliminate alcohol and things would get better. I had to change almost everything. And it wasn't like an intentional thing. It just happened over time that I came to this realization that I have to give more than I take. And so I started a nonprofit probably earlier than I should have. At 18 months, it seemed like a great idea. But 18 months sober, I just felt like I needed to do more for the world. And so I did. And then I talked to people about my sobriety. I believe in recovering out loud, which you are both doing. I think that's such an important thing that we do for other people. We give to people so they don't have to suffer. They have someone holding the flashlight for them. And that's what you guys are doing here. So my guess is, even though you don't necessarily like haven't gone through a literal process, you're doing the work. And I don't think you'd be here if you hadn't done that work.
It's good to hear that, because I think, especially if someone's listening to this and they're not alcohol free yet, but they're thinking about doing it, it can be daunting to go, right, so I've got to go back through and do this and work this out and kind of analyze this. And I think it can stop people sometimes. But then everyone, what you're saying is that it's different for everybody. You don't have to have, you know, notepads full of scribbled notes, you know. Go on, Shaz.
Can I jump in there as well? Yeah, and you know what, Ben? Yes, I completely agree. And I think, touching on what Austin's just said there, it's you don't know you have to do the work, if that makes sense, when you stop. And it is different for everybody. And a lot of this, when you remove the booze, it begins to happen naturally, doesn't it? What you've spoken about there, people holding the torch, shining the way for people further back, that makes my heart sing. We talk about the lighthouse analogy, same sort of thing as well, singing about sobriety, letting people know. But speaking from my own bitter personal experience, been at this for 5 years, I didn't go, right, okay, day one, everybody, here we go. I am now going to put down the rosé and I'm going to do the work. And I've said, piss off. What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. A year down the line, when life begins to change and opportunities come your way and you find yourself helping other people, and then you talk about it more on the podcast and another guest brings some more brilliant insights, and you've got this community. A lot of it starts to happen naturally for other people. As I touched on earlier, things like counselling and therapy will become part of that, because people drink for very, very different reasons. In my case, there was none of that. But I did realise that I was going to have to change a lot of things in my life if I wanted to stay on this path. Friendship groups, the places you socialise, the things that you thought you enjoyed, everything changed. Absolutely everything. And that becomes part of the work. So it's not as daunting in every area as it sounds. Has any of that made sense? I get it. I'm not sure if anybody else has.
I will say, the beginning, when I quit drinking, all I could do was not drink. That was it. I got fired from my job at day 18, and I just kind of committed myself to not drinking. That's all I had to do. I don't know how long that lasted. It was a while. I spent the first 30 days like looking for a loophole. I just did tons of Google searches about like how to go back to drinking. But all I did was not drink. I watched trashy reality show TV and I didn't drink, and that was it. It took a while to get past that point where you're just like, okay, I can do 10 minutes. I feel like I want to have a drink. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to come back. And then I might go for another walk. Eventually, the cobwebs start to clear and things start to like not be quite so fuzzy, and my mind started to come back a little bit. Then I was able to start thinking about who I wanted to be. But that, it was a while. That was not a first 90 days situation. That was I was happy in my sobriety, but it was well into my sobriety before I started really thinking about who I wanted to be. And in 8.5 years, what I really know now is that I have the capacity to think about who I want to be. It doesn't mean that I know who I want to be. I have the tools to make sure that I can be who I want to be.
That's going on my quotes board. Love that one, Austin. Fabulous. Although I haven't got much space anymore, I need to go through and audit my quotes board, because it is now completely covered.
Of course you do.
And that'd be a great day. We could do it together over Zoom if you like.
Actually, I think I've got something on that day, but thank you. Thank you, Ben.
I'll send you a placeholder. I'll send you a few different options. Ben's audit of the quote. Anyway, we'll do it together. Austin, tell us about life today then. You know, so you are, you have the tools. Fabulous. After 8.5 years, you feel confident that you've got the tools and the capacity now to really work. What's life like for you today? Have you got a great life? Are you happy?
Oh, man.
It's deep.
Am I happy? My therapist asked me one time if I even knew what happiness was, and I'll never forget that day. Like, do you actually know what happiness is? And I think I spent a year exploring just what happiness even was.
Oh my God.
Here's what I will say. I celebrated my 20th wedding anniversary this year, which was hugely exciting. Congratulations, Ben, on new marriage. It's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's cool. I like it.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm into it, which is good. It's a big commitment.
It is a huge commitment. And you know what? It is bring like tying yourself to someone for your life is mm-hmm. is a pretty big deal. So 20 years. I'm so fortunate that my wife, Carrie, stayed with me and that we've been able to work out a new life in my sobriety, which has been fantastic. I have two daughters, 11 and 6, almost 7. I wanted to make sure I got that right. I did. I think that I'm content with my life. And I think that that is what I want for my life now, is to be content with where I am. And that's a huge part of my sobriety, is staying in the present moment as much as I can, living in today. Because if I start living other places in the future or in the past, I get really miserable. So I'm content with the life that I have right now, today.
Love that. What
a lovely answer.
Isn't it? Austin, I could listen to you like just talking about anything, I think. You've got such... I don't know, just such, I can see it on Ben's face as well, such a calm manner. And you're just so considered when you speak him.
And I think content is such a great word to choose, because I think we live in a world where you go on Instagram and we're always being constantly encouraged to strive and do more and be more. And why haven't I got this thing yet? And why is their life like this? And why is mine not? You know, we're in this quite competitive, comparative society that actually content is what we all want to be, isn't it?
Mm.
Like content, it's not about what you have. Content is about, what's the phrase? And this should be on my quotes board. It's about not necessarily needing this to be happy. You know, it's not the things that you don't have that you strive. It's about kind of looking around your life and going, you know what? This is where I am. This is what I've got. And that's great for me. I think we overlook how important being content is, because it doesn't sound very glitzy or glamorous. Oh yeah, I'm really content. It doesn't. It almost doesn't sound optimistic enough. But isn't it a wonderful thing to be content and happy with where you are?
Yeah, I think it's. We all are told every day that we should have more than we have. That more is always better. And I spent my life striving for more every day. And this is quite frankly one of the things that I talk to my therapist about all the time, is this idea of I'm not successful enough, that I want to be more successful. And we uncover often it's that I want success reflected on me, right? I want other people to see me as successful. It's not about what I want. It's about what everyone else is going to say or do or think about me. And when I'm content, those things, the wanting more, the striving for success, those things are still there. I want my kids to have more. I want my wife and I to be happier. I want all those things, but they make me miserable when I spend my time out there in the world. And contentment, you're right, it doesn't sound very amazing, right? Like that sounds like a terrible answer. Austin, are you happy with your life and 8.5 years of sobriety? I don't know if I'm happy, but I'm content. Yikes. I don't know if that's what I want. That sounds terrible, but I love the life that I have. That's the most important thing to me. I got to drop my daughter off at middle school this morning. We get to spend time in the morning talking to each other. I learned more about her every day. If I can stay in that moment while I'm there, my life is fantastic.
Fabulous.
Doesn't get any better. Yeah, it's just lovely. It just gives me a warm and fuzzy feeling, the word content. It does. It doesn't have to be glitzy and glamorous, does it? It's bob on, is that, Austin? It's just, yeah.
It feels almost like it's, you know, you feel almost bad, because I feel like that about my life. I feel really content with where I am. And it almost sounds like you're not being ambitious enough. But then again, that's not me saying that. That is what do people think? That's an external noise. It's not my internal thing. I just want to wake up every day, hang out with Jem and the baby, eat some good food and get an early night. That's fine by me, you know. I don't need to swan off to Milan for Fashion Week to feel, fulfilled.
Hey, we had a crazy late night. We got in the other night. It was 10 past 11. I was getting quite anxious. I was like, girls, I don't do this anymore. Because I'm content with my lot, like you, content with I don't know. It's the things that make you happy, isn't it? And
more of us were happy to be content, you know, rather than more of us were happy to be content, it would be the world would be a generally better place, I think.
It's hard not to compare yourself to other people and want to strive to be something more. That's something I actively work against because I am on social media a lot. I love social media. I love seeing other people's lives. But when you look at that, it is easy to get lost in that what everyone else has and that I'm not good enough or I don't have enough money or my kids aren't experiencing some X thing. But like if my kids are happy, my wife is happy, if my friends around me are happy, what I don't need anything more. I could want more, but I don't need anything more.
Do you think as well, Austin, that a lot of this comes from sobriety? Because so much of what you're saying resonates massively. When I was drinking, I thought I was extrovert and I needed to do this to be liked and to be funny and to be a laugh a minute. And have I upset somebody or, you know, have I pleased that person? Now, without booze, I couldn't give less of a shit. And I only mean that. Of course, I care about my immediate circle, my family, as you've mentioned, my close friends, Ben, obviously, day in, day out, he gets it. Do you know what I mean? But they're the people I care about. I don't care anymore about impressing anybody. If you don't like this now, at the age of, 2 months shy of 50, if it ain't good enough, c'est la vie, jog on, whatever, you sort of, with sobriety comes that real confidence. And it comes full circle again, doesn't it, to what we started off talking about, knowing who you are. And that's enough. And if it ain't good enough for other people, whatever.
Everything in my life comes from sobriety. There isn't a single thing that's happening in my life that can't be tied back to January 23rd of 2015 when I didn't drink for the first day. Everything is tied back to that day because I wouldn't be here if it weren't for that day of choosing not to drink and every day that's happened since then. I don't have any of this. I don't get to be content. I don't get to strive to be something else. I don't get to drop my daughter off at middle school or watch my little one go off to first grade. Or yesterday I did the field trip with my first grader. I don't get any of that if I didn't choose to not drink on one day and then made that choice a bunch of days since then.
Well, more than 3,100 times. I'm rubbish at maths. Sorry, Ben, go on.
Glad you enjoyed the field trip with a load of first graders. That sounds like a bit of a nightmare to me personally, but, you know, you're smiling.
It was exhausting. I was so tired. I got home and I was just like, I was ready for a nap and a snack. I was just wiped out.
You sound like a toddler.
I might as well be a first grader.
Every day when I get home from work. Yeah. Yeah. I fancy a nap and a snack right now.
I love that.
I mean, you can't beat a nap and a snack. Come on. That's
contentment.
That's contentment.
Austin, we are fast running out of time. This happens every time we chat with anybody on Over the Influence, but this has gone so fast and I wish we were chatting for 2 hours. Could you just tell us briefly about charlottesday.org and what that's about?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for asking. Charlotte's Day is an organization that we started about 6 years ago. I always joke that I started it at 18 months of sobriety, which was probably earlier than I should have been tackling something like, especially when I had no idea what was involved in starting and running a nonprofit, but it was a passion project of ours. My daughter, Charlotte, went through feeding therapy when she was early on in her kind of learning to eat. One of the issues that she had was that she couldn't chew and swallow like other children, normally developing children, are able to. And in that process of going to feeding therapy, finding an amazing feeding therapist here in Denver, which was awesome, was just down the road from our house. One of the first things that we're told is that we should get this supportive seating that would allow Charlotte to expend her energy eating rather than sitting. Because if I always talk about this, like sit, it's like sitting on a park bench. Imagine that you ate every meal of your sitting on a park bench with your knees, your feet dangling, and how much energy it would take to sit. So she needed to spend her energy eating. And so we started Charlotte's Day in order to make sure that children who are in feeding therapy when their parents couldn't necessarily afford supportive seating, could provide that to their child. And that's what we do at Charlotte's Day.
Austin, thank you so much. We started this episode with a quote. I would either need to get sober or I would die. And everything we've heard over the best part of an hour, it's incredible. It's really inspiring. I want to end with another quote on this episode from yourself. When we share our stories and recover out loud, we get to celebrate our sobriety, but also show the world wonderful results of giving up drinking. It isn't a sad, lonely life. It is a life filled with joy. That's amazing.
I think it's one of the most important things that we can do with our sobriety. And the two of you do this every time I put in my headphones and I go for my, what I call my stupid mental health walk. I go out there and I hear other people recovering, whether they're sharing their story for the first time or the 100th time, I learn something about myself and about other people, about the two of you and about your guests. Sobriety is one of the most amazing things. And if we tell people that it's amazing, I think more people will do it because it's so scary at first. The unknown is so huge, and we can, Chaz, as you said, hold the torch or the flashlight, as we say in the States. Either way, we can shine a little bit of light, a step ahead for someone else, and they can follow in behind us and maybe even run past us, which is what I hope that people just can show me the way too. On that note, I do want to make Maggie is on this call from the Sober Summit. And one of the things I think that I've found through you actually then got introduced to Maggie in the Sober Summit. She's bringing people together like you are to shine this light out into the world and say, look at what's possible in the world. And I think that if we all do this, if we can all recover out loud, and I know that I'm in a unique situation, some people can't. I can, I choose to, but people like Maggie at the Sober Summit and here at Over the Influence, you're changing the lives of people because they can have hope for the future.
Amazing. Austin Carr in Denver, Colorado. We are very, very pleased that you found us for your stupid mental health walks. I go on those as well. They're a pain in the ass, but they seem to work, don't they? Before you go, Austin, if anybody wants to follow you on socials and find out more about what you do, and also charlottesday.org as well, give that a plug. Where can they find all the information?
You can find me on socials at Austin J. Carr, and it's K-A-R-R. You can find my website there as well, austinjcarr.com. And then if you'd like more information about Charlotte's Day, you can find us at charlottesday.org.
Huge thanks to this week's guest, Austin. We really, really did enjoy our chat with him. As always, with any of the guests, if you want further information about what they do, you want to connect with them on the socials, you can look them up, or as always, just ping us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. I'm doing this little end bit on my own this evening. It's a Saturday night. I'm absolutely knackered because today we have tackled Penyvan. That's how you pronounce it. I think we are in South Wales in the beautiful Brecon Beacons, and it has just been an absolutely epic day. Myself and Ben, who is en route home as we speak, and a load of community members. I think the best bit about it was that the sun shone from start to finish. Not like flipping Ben Nevis, where we spent most of it in a cloud and got eaten alive by midges, but still, it was a memorable weekend. It really, really was. Only one more event left for this year's programme of activities. That is looking like it's sold out. But if you want to get involved in 2024, we are about to start working on next year's diary. It's likely that we will be doing the Yorkshire Three Peaks, which is an absolutely cracking event. It was the first one we ever did, and it was just brilliant. People still talk about it, so I think we're going to repeat that at some point in 2024. all TBC. It'll all be done with people that know exactly what they're doing, with our qualified mountain leaders. We work with a fantastic organisation called Second Life Outdoors with Rhys and Tony and the team. So keep an eye on our socials. Have a look at the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk, or ping us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. I'm absolutely goosed, and it's about time to get into this great big bed and have a lovely, lovely snooze. As always, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back same time next week.